From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, you know what we do.
Yeah, that's right, baby. You know exactly.
We are the podcast of freaking champions, talking all things Big Ten football, including the reign of terror that is Coach Sig and the Indiana Hoosiers. I think they're just going to go undefeated for the next 10 years. I don't know. They're never going to lose
again. They're never losing again.
Ever. Never going to see them lose. We got fun week 8 to talk about. We got another field storming I was at. We got some teams traveling east winning games for the first time. Not all of them, but some. We had the ranked on ranked matchup, and one of them's not going to be ranked anymore. A lot of good stuff this week on the Podcast of Champions, talking Big Ten football. If you want to get a hold of us, you want to get a question into the show, we love your emails. Big10cast@gmail.com. You can also call or text us at 424-532-0678 or tweet us at B1G Podcast. And we do love when you leave us a 5-star rating. Spotify's awesome, but if you have like an iPhone or iPad, you want to do it on Apple Podcasts, we have a giveaway for you. If you leave us a 5-star rating and some kind of review, we will, on every recap show, read all the reviews we get. The funniest one, the one that makes us smile, that's the one we're going to send you a $17 Trader Joe's gift card. Thanks to our friends at Trader Joe's, specifically John and Brea. And do we have any new reviews to go over?
Well, we've got one review, so we've got a winner.
Oh, well. Wow, okay.
Great to know. This
congratulations to you.
I think this is a new one, maybe. J.L. Carey, did we read this one last time?
I don't know.
Big Ten first year as we reach... No. We have no new reviews, so nobody gets a gift card.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we will get one.
I'm excited for that.
Yes.
So if you want a Trader Joe's gift card, you've got to leave a review.
Yes.
This is pathetic. A pathetic showing from you, the listener. And that's another feature of this show. We like to berate you, the listener, for lack of 5-star reviews. That's the quid pro quo here. We talk at you somewhat intelligibly for, what do we say, 2 hours a week, 2.5 hours, 3 hours sometimes?
Closer to three.
And you provide us with 5-star reviews. If there's no quid, there's no quo.
Yeah. Appreciate that. And we are also live on our YouTube channel. I'm going to start putting up some comments. Like Max has a comment. Ryan, how do you lose to a team that got patsied at home or pantsed at home by Northwestern the week before? I know. This is the beauty. I think there's some big Pac-12 elements now infused into the DNA of the Big Ten. So we love that. So it's like it's a big soup of craziness. A lot of stuff going on. So we're going to get to all that kind of stuff. We have our rankings, the power rankings. We for both the mythical Pac-12 and the Big Ten. We might have some adjustments at the bottom, which we didn't think we would get. So we got to go through all of those and recap all of the fun games. Picks wise, David made a move. 5-2. I went 3-4. So David,
your loyalty to the team you cover is so profound that you were like, you know what? I'm going to try for the exact same record that USC is going to have after today.
That's true.
And that's what you achieved.
I actually switched my pick in my for my staff picks. And mm-hmm. I know you won't let me switch, so I didn't say anything. But I actually switched my pick late. I'm like, I think Maryland's going to cover. And I was right. But okay.
You were right that time, but you were wrong
on the show.
Time.
But I came to my senses.
You know, I mean, if you pick two different things, then you're always right at least once, you know, if it's a binary.
I think the latest pick is I've switched. Mm. I would have switched this. Mm-hmm.
There's always some rationalization.
We don't allow switching on our picks. Because it's done before where the quarterback gets hurt. And I'm like, hey, can we switch your pick? You're like, no. I'm like, the quarterback's hurt. I would change my pick. No.
No.
Yeah, you don't like that.
Was the quarterback hurt?
No. No. I just, there. Well, potentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else? Oh, I want to let everyone know. So my picks were bad. You could have followed Dave's picks and that helped if you went over to my bookie and put his picks in there. I think the first time in a long time, David had a really good week picking games. So do you trust them this week going into week 9? I don't know. Do you trust me? Do you trust anybody? You want to just do the opposite of what we do and then flip a coin if we pick opposite games? You can do whatever you want over at my bookie. It's fun. And if you like the in sort of game situation where it's like halftime and you think, I don't think anyone's going to score after halftime, I'm going to bet the under. Or if you think someone's going to pull away, you can take them and whatever the spread is for that half of the game. So a lot of stuff you can do over at my bookie. There's fun games too. You can even get in there and play a little blackjack and stuff. A lot of things there. And if you want to try it out, your initial deposit will be matched by my bookie if you use the promo code POC. So go in there, over to my bookie, promo code POC, and they will give you a 100% initial deposit match. So go check it out over there. Should be a fun slate of games this weekend. College football is just fun. Seeing Georgia beat Texas, seeing Oregon beat Ohio State. There's so many. I think the playoffs going to be amazing because there's all these teams. There's no clear number one all the time and all this. And you never know who's going to beat anyone on any given day. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun the second half of the season all the way to the playoffs. So make sure you go check it out on MyBookie because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
That was an absolutely gorgeous read.
Thanks. You know, I'm good. You know, I try.
I mean, that was fantastic. Can we all get a round of applause for Ryan? Can you play that? Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Good stuff. Well, we have to get to.
We do.
Because there were some games.
There's so many things to discuss.
There were games that
mostly
were
USC being 3-4 right now.
They are 3-4. Mm-hmm. How crazy is that? Okay. Yeah.
But they were on the road at like Ohio State or something, right, this week?
It was similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
would say. Let's see.
I'm sure we'll get to that.
We'll do it at one point. So this is these are like polar opposites, I guess you could say, our first game that we're going to talk about. Because coming in at number 18, and the new cellar dweller in the Big Ten,
Purdue Boilermakers.
They were hosting our number one team,
Oregon Ducks.
So Oregon won 35-0. The important question is, as always, you know, I've heard people ask this question, is Dylan Gabriel shaving points? And I think Purdue was so bad that it didn't actually matter. But there was an interception in the second quarter that looked odd. And then I'll say this. Everything we thought about Purdue last week against Illinois, like Ryan Brown looked really good. Ryan Walters, wow, he can call plays, the whole thing. Yeah, no, not against Oregon. Ryan Brown couldn't escape the pass rush at any point. He was 9 of 19 for 93 yards. That's not good. That's bad. Sacked 3 times, threw a pick, and the offense just had no chance of doing anything. Like, even when they were given like a pretty decently short field after that Dylan Gabriel pick, they did absolutely nothing with it. And you know, Gabriel
freaking score, dude. We got 28.5. I mean, we thought Oregon would go like 35 points. And Purdue scored 49 the week before. Like, like one touchdown, they cover the spread. Yep. They couldn't put up a freaking point.
Yep. You know, Dylan Gabriel, I wasn't sure he was going to throw an incompletion in this game. Like, he was 21 of 25. One of those was to the other team. And then there were a few at the end of the second quarter where it just looked like he was, you know, kind of just wilding out there. But everything was so easy for Oregon offensively. Just everything. And then, you know, defensively, it was a joke.
Yeah, Gabriel has to, like, talk to some of his defensive guys if he's going to be shaving points. Like, you have to let them score once, dumbasses. Well, one time.
To be clear, satire, parody, joking, nothing but jokes.
It was a real article. I read it somewhere. Like, Oregon Live, I think they had it. Like, Dylan Gabriel in the middle of a point-shaving scandal could derail their number one season. I thought that was a real thing. I don't know.
35-0 over Purdue. Purdue's really bad. Oregon is really good.
Yeah. Mississippi Trojan said, yeah, that game effed up my Friday night parlay. Yeah, no, that if you this went the way you sort of thought it would go after Oregon, huge emotional win, Friday night, playing in Purdue, like you got to go east. Like they were just going to be, it was sort of like when Penn State played UCLA, right? It was going to be like a business thing, like let's just do what we need to do, win the game and go home and get out of here. But Purdue like didn't even show up at home. Like it was like unbelievably bad. And I think it's a really good sign for Oregon that you could sort of like sleepwalk your way to a 35-0 win over a power four opponent. But it's very concerning for Purdue that we were like, okay, you fire, you know, your offensive coordinator, Graham Harrell's gone, your defensive-minded head coach takes over play calling duties, and you score 49 points and go for two at the end to win against a ranked team. I mean, that's like, okay, there's like some juice here. Like there was no, it was like you were juiced out the previous week. There was no juice left. And this is what you were left with, like some rotting pulp of, I don't know what.
I will say this. I did. So from like a, just a macro standpoint, Purdue wasn't going to win this game.
No.
But what I liked in the second half is that they didn't stop trying. There was a lot of turnovers on downs. I think they turned it over on downs. Was it three straight times or was it just three times in the second half?
I think it might have been three straight times, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, it was three times and they punted in the middle of that on a three and out. But,
okay.
You know, I like to see effort. I like to see trying. They did. You know, they were able to run the ball, especially in the second half. Now, whether that was mostly because Oregon was, you know, playing second unit guys, yeah, maybe. But, yeah, it was not the showing they had against Illinois.
Just
not by a long shot.
One touchdown, like a point, like something. Like that was, holy crap, dude. That's just, I mean, yeah. Like
8 points is exactly what we needed, though. We needed eight points.
I thought it was 20 and a half.
27 and a half is what we had.
Oh, okay. I think I saw it like that was like later or something, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know, whatever. But yeah, very disappointing. I mean, I just thought I was hoping because even Wisconsin looked like kind of left for dead early, and then they've been like, okay, they look like they're coming back and you know, maybe they can do some good things. And you thought like, okay, Purdue's bad, but that was a good showing. And not keep it close against Oregon, but like show some signs of life and then okay. I think the schedule's not great going forward either, but like you're at least you had some kind of chance, and this was just like demoralizing. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on here.
Yep.
All right. We're going to go number 17. They've crawled out from the last spot.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
And I don't know how you have them ranked below the team they just beat. Number 13,
Rutgers. Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Yeah, that's very much the sound effect for Rutgers after this one. Yeah, I don't really know either. I'm basically still banking a lot on how they started the season, but Rutgers looks they look broken now. UCLA went in to the hostile confines of Piscataway, New Jersey, and pulled out a 35-32 win. I think in a large way, this game hinged on two fourth down decisions early in the game. Facing a fourth and two, I believe in the second quarter, Greg Schiano did the bone stupid thing where he took a delay of game to give himself more room to punt.
Yeah, but then you could have more. Their punter has more space to try to like.
But you had a fourth and two on UCLA's side of the field. And you elect to punt.
Fourth down's dangerous, David.
And they're like, so scary.
You could. You. It's just better.
So
to
many
give
things
other,
can happen on a fourth down.
Just give the other team the ball.
He doesn't go for it, thinking it's going to continue as like a 7-7 type of game, which is what it was when he did that. UCLA, on the flip side, perhaps learning a critical lesson from last week. I'm going to choose to believe that, and not that it's just willy nilly decision making. faced a fourth and one on the ensuing drive, on their own 18-yard line. And they go for it, as you should, on every fourth and one you ever face in the entire world, unless it's a very specific situation at the end of the game.
What are the odds that he thought it was third and one?
And they QB sneak it on a tush push, and they get it.
Damn.
And on that drive, they score a touchdown and they kind of break serve. And then it's from there on, UCLA is controlling the game to a much larger extent. That was a huge hinge point in this game because it was a close-ish game. These were not two wildly dissimilar teams with wildly dissimilar talent levels, you know, the whole thing. Rutgers is hugely injured right now. They were down their two best tight ends. They're out for the season now. A huge part of their secondary is dinged up. Some of them played, but they're still hurt. One of their linebackers was out. Their entire edge rush is hurt. Like, they're really, really hurt. And UCLA is just not very good. So it was a pretty even battle. But this is one where definitively Deshaun Foster won the game management over Greg Schiano. Which is crazy. I also thought Greg Schiano's timeout usage at the end was flawed, kind of a minor point, but he took three timeouts before the 2 minute warning when he was down two scores. The thing is, if you take all three of the timeouts before the 2 minute warning, what you are requiring your team to do then is convert an onside kick because they have to do it because once you kick the ball away, it's game over. Whereas if you maintain the three timeouts and go to the 2 minute timeout, you have to score twice in 2 minutes, which isn't very, very hard, but not impossible if you have three timeouts because you can kick it. You can score in a minute. You got a minute left. If you convert the onside kick at that point, great. If you don't, you can still get it back if you get a three and out. And so you have a better chance. It's probably, I would guess, you know, you get 20 or 30 more seconds in aggregate. And the reason for that is, and the reason you want to do that is the seconds under 2 minutes are more valuable than the seconds above 2 minutes because of clock rules. First downs, out of bounds, those both stop the clock.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's stupid. what I liked about this game for Rutgers was Ethan Calikmanis, knowing how banged up everyone was, knowing Kyle Manungai was banged up as well, played maybe his best game of the season. He was completing everything in the intermediate range until very late. When they finally got a bead on, you know, he's going to be throwing that 18-yard out, and Brian Addison jumped the route and picked it off. But he was really dealing, very accurate. And his receivers, you know, for the first time in a couple of weeks, actually caught some tough balls. There was a one-handed catch, even when guys were not completing the pass, but they'd be falling out of bounds, and you'd see, oh, wow, they had the ball cradled in their hand. Like, it was an incompletion, but that's amazing. So that was really cool. On the flip side, UCLA got the best game of his career for Ethan Garbers.
Yeah, he looked really good.
Four touchdowns, only six incompletions. He also ran for a stupid 49-yard scramble touchdown where he juked a guy at the line of scrimmage, and that was absolutely necessary, and then blew down the sideline for a touchdown. UCLA looked explosive in this game in a way that they hadn't previously. They got an explosive play for Keegan Jones down the right sideline. They were working the running backs into the passing game to a great extent. It was clearly the best offensive showing for UCLA this year. It was also almost equally as clearly their worst defensive showing of the year, considering the opponent they were facing and considering their offensive struggles the last 2 weeks. So game ended up pretty close, but UCLA should be pretty happy with the offensive output and maybe a little concerned about falling apart defensively against a team that had been pretty bad offensively in recent weeks.
It's good to see the Bruins showing some life there. First Big Ten win. Big win traveling all the way. One of the longest trips that you're going to have. So that was a big one. We have some super chat to talk about. Colt Bush.
Hell yeah, Colt.
35 bones. Since my son has been born, UCLA is undefeated and averaging 35 points per game. Should we start making the 2025 National Champs banners now? Keep it mediocre, boys.
Congratulations, ooh, Colt.
Yeah, thank you. And congratulations on the birth of your son. That is awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, they celebrated your son's birth with a 35-point output, an explosion of 35 points. Let's not remember all of the UCLA teams in very recent past who have averaged 35 points a game. No. It was an explosion for 35 points in this
game. Yeah. Search says Ethan Manziel Garbers.
That's right, baby.
Good stuff. All right. So let's go. Next up, we have way down at number 16 now. Oh, wait. Hold on. Where is it? Okay.
USC Trojans.
And they keep losing to bad teams, and we're not sure where to put them, but they have to put them below them. So we're going to put it at number 15.
Maryland Terrapins.
I mean, Maryland is ahead of them in conference.
Yes.
And has more wins overall than USC.
Yeah, 4-3. 3-4.
Look, all right, everyone. I think everyone is getting a little bit out over their skis about Lincoln Riley. Mm. The mess he inherited from Clay Helton. The years, like, look, it's been years since sanctions, but it hasn't been that many years. There's still that effect, still that
lingering,
the aftershocks to the aftershocks. And he's still sifting through the wreckage, trying to find out, you know, what they need and how to do it. And, you know, like, I think there was a really telling quote he had after the game where somebody, I mean, might have been Connor, might have been Luca, asking him, you know, what does this team need to do to win games, to close out games? And he said, I don't know. And that's so telling because he's still in the discovery phase of this project, you know?
It's pretty funny about that because he's got, like, so Luca, who's the one that was...
who's just killing him left and right in the most passive voice possible, and it's so awesome to watch. Anyway, go ahead.
So Luca was the reporter that got, like, banned from practice for a week or something, and then they let him back in or whatever. And he, like, younger kid, and Orange County Register reporter, you know, does a nice job. And he asked, I think it was on our Zoom, Lincoln Riley about recruiting Southern California, and Lincoln Riley gave some quote about how it's the priority one and all this stuff, whatever. And then within, I don't know, it was hours, but like that day or like the next day, had like, well, I talked to, you know, Lincoln Riley says this is the priority. I talked to local high school
juggernaut. I talked to St. John Bosco in Mater Dei, and they said they haven't seen him in years.
They said like he's been there once since the spring, you know? And it's funny, like I think technically they've gone like once in the spring and once since, and that's all you can do by NCAA standards. But the general perception is he hasn't recruited Southern California hard enough. And so Luca just sort of like torched him. And then like really, but like he didn't even wait. He just did it. Like he gets the quote and then like, boom, here, I talked to the high school, like, whatever. And I think Lincoln Riley gave the I don't know answer because he just didn't want to answer a question from Luca is my guess. Because Connor, my guy, asked him something very similar and he gave like a longer answer. But you end up hurting yourself because it's a terrible quote that you said,
because,
I don't know.
Because you sound stupid.
Yes, by saying I don't know because you're trying to like shun the reporter.
But look, sound stupid, but we know what he really meant. He meant he's in the discovery phase of this project. And there's still years to go in this discovery phase. He's got to figure out, you know, all of the answers to these questions. But then is there any doubt that a master like Lincoln Riley is going to push the right buttons once he gets through the discovery phase? I have no doubt that a team like Maryland is going to struggle to beat USC in 3 or 4 years. I think it's just going to take a little bit more time. You know, he's got to get further away from sanctions, further away from the devastation left by Clay Helton, who had a better record through 34 games by 3 games than Lincoln Riley has now. He's got to get further away from that. But once he does, oh, man, the winning that will happen. Maryland won 29-28.
Do you ever see the, like, I think the Rainer Troy people were talking about this. Like, so the strategy now is, like, you're down 14. If you score...
You're supposed to go for two.
Go for two. But it doesn't... Do you remember it working ever? Or has it, like... It's, like, it makes sense mathematically.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing it, like, work.
Well, it worked.
But, I mean, pretty much whatever you do against USC late in games, it's going to work.
Yeah, it was really cool. So this was a comeback again. USC was up 21-7 in the third quarter, deep into the third quarter, 21-7.
Yeah, Maryland got the ball, got USC got a stop. USC was driving to midfield, up 14, like middle of the third quarter, and then Miller Moss threw a pick that wasn't good. And it just, you could, like, at that point, you were just like, oh, this is over. Like, they were driving to just put the game away. And then Maryland just went on a tear, and USC just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, even from there, I mean, Maryland did throw another pick, and USC scored to make it 28-14 with 13:31 to go in the fourth. Like, this was not... I mean, this was a game that USC, I think, was in control of even after that Miller Moss pick.
Yes.
Let's go through some decision making stuff because I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
Fourth and one at the Maryland 24 with 2 minutes to go. You've got USC attempting that field goal that gets blocked. Would you have gone for it, or do you kick the field goal?
I've talked to people that are upset about it. I thought it might have been 4th and 2. I don't know if it was 4th and 1.
It was listed as a 4th and 1. I think it was a long one.
Okay. I didn't really have that big of an issue at the time, but there are some people that felt really strongly. Otherwise, I was told by someone that I don't trust very much, but just earlier today, maybe 10 minutes ago, that you go for every 4th and 1 you have. Mm-hmm. And I think that you know, I don't have like a major, major problem with it, but I get, you know, if people do. You do, though, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I would have gone for it because I think it's marginal, because I think the field goal, if you make it, it's a 2-score game. That pretty much wins you the game. Yeah. But I think if you go for it, you are effectively winning the game right then. So I'm always big on, you know, move through the world with aggression. The kicking game has not been bad for USC, but it's not been like, this is the best kicking game in the entire history of college football.
Yeah, no, they missed a field goal in overtime. Like, they missed some critical
kicking field goals. A 41-yarder is not a sure thing for college kickers.
Yeah.
So I think there's been a propensity in football this year for guys to just try too many kicks. When you're facing a 4th and 1, almost always go for it. So I thought that was a mistake. Marginal, I think, because if you make the field goal, it's a 9-point game, but a mistake nonetheless. But I do think it was an oddly coached game from Mike Locksley. He called a timeout. He called one of his timeouts at the 2:06 mark, if I'm remembering correctly.
Like, to stop the clock before.
To stop the clock before they got to the 2-minute warning. But you're not saving anything there. You're just wasting a timeout, because they're going to hit the 2-minute warning anyway, that's going to stop the clock. If you're going to call that timeout, call it earlier. Because then you might save actually a few seconds on your offensive possession for the 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
But at 2:06, they can bleed that all the way to 2 minutes anyway. So you're not saving anything.
And I think you would allow USC to throw a pass there, and it wouldn't hurt them if it was incomplete, because it would just hit the 2-minute warning.
Yeah. Know? It's just, I thought that one was a little dopey. You know, Maryland won the game, and Billy Edwards, I thought, played a really, really, really good game. He had the one interception.
His career high, yeah.
But making plays with his legs, moving around, staying clear of that pass rush, and making throws downfield, like, on the move. He looked really good. He actually looked like, and I know I've made this point a few times, but he looks like the kind of quarterback who would do well in a Lincoln Riley system, because he can move a little bit.
Yeah.
Miller Moss, for all that he is a good and effective, you know, quarterback who can, you know, deal the ball downfield, he doesn't have that mobility. Like, he does not have the ability to move around when things break down. And for the way Lincoln Riley's offense is, it's pretty simple. Things are going to break down pretty often. You have to have the ability to move. And that's a trait that almost all of his quarterbacks have had. And Miller Moss doesn't really have it. So, you know, just something to think about. But anyway, Maryland won 29-28. It was a very fun game to watch.
So USC's 3-4. This is the fourth time they've had a fourth quarter lead in every game. Every game, and they're 3-4. And I forget, I think it was ESPN stats did something that in like the last like 200 teams that have done that, only one has been able to have a losing record if you've had a fourth quarter lead. Every time they find ways to lose each and every game. They've had a 14-point lead, like they did against Penn State, blow it. The fan base is really upset. This was a huge win for Mike Locksley in Maryland, who I don't think you're going to get a lot out of this. Like, they don't look like a very good team, but they put
blown out at home the previous week by Northwestern, and then come back and beat USC.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It was a field storming. But there wasn't a lot of people left. This is the same thing. Like, I've been on the road for all these games. A lot of the home fans, when USC has lost these games, had already left because they assumed that they were losing the game. Michigan, a ton of people had left, and they end up winning. A lot of Maryland fans had left. They end up winning. The same thing kind of happened with Minnesota for a little bit. It's pretty funny when that's happening and you're still losing these games. So, they got to figure something out.
Do you think you would have run it more with Woody Marks, who had 17 carries for 82 yards?
He really, like, that was the talk of you need to run the ball more. And it was almost like a defiant, like, I'm going to show people we don't need to run it more. And it sort of was a, I think it was a mistake.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Because you know what running does?
I mean, you don't like.
Well, first, it's effective. Like, that's first. But, yeah. Like, the second thing is it actually, that clock thing, you know how there's, like, a lot of it at the end of this game and that helped Maryland come back?
Yeah.
If you were running it more consistently, there wouldn't be as much of it. And you'd still be pretty effective, right? So if you run, the clock drains faster, right?
Yes.
Than if you're throwing incomplete. You know what I mean? Like, any run, even if it's an unsuccessful run, it drains the clock, right? But they're not unsuccessful runs. I mean, Woody Marks is averaging almost 5 yards a carry. That's only a yard and a half less than Miller Moss was averaging throwing the ball.
No, that was one of my keys. Like, Moss has to get his yards per attempt up.
Yeah.
And it was under 7 again in this game. And
yeah, and when you factor in, like, you know, he was, what, sacked? Was it 2 times? 3 times? Something like that?
No, I think it was I think he only got sacked once.
But, oh, was it?
Okay. But there was a lot of pressure. He was actually good when he wasn't under pressure. He threw the ball 50 times. That's the problem. Like, you don't need to be throwing it 50 times against Maryland or against anybody. He shouldn't be throwing it 50 times.
No, that's insane. Both quarterbacks threw 50 times.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, they were both over 300 yards. But it's just one of those things.
If you're throwing it 50 times, you really got to get out of the 20s. Like, you can't justify having thrown it 50 times if you're still scoring under 30 points.
Yeah, that's not good.
There's got to be a correlation here. If you're throwing it 50, you got to be scoring 40.
Yeah. I got some concerns for Maryland going forward, but it's obviously a huge win. A lot of concerns for USC going forward. If, you know, all of Lincoln Riley's teams have averaged at least 40 points. This team is barely at 30. They only got over 30 points twice in their 7 games.
Can we do bowl game watch for USC?
You're going to have to, yeah.
All right, here we go. Rutgers at home this weekend.
I mean,
they're probably beating Rutgers. Rutgers is really beat up. I thought they had a chance to lose to Maryland. I don't think they have any chance of losing to Rutgers at home at 8 p.m. on Friday. All right, at Washington. That feels like a loss right now.
It very well could. I mean, Washington, I think
it'll be another close game because that's the only thing that USC plays.
They play close games, yeah.
Nebraska at home, they'll be favored, but who knows?
I mean, that could be a coin flip kind of thing.
At UCLA, I still think USC will be favored.
But still, like, it'll be a close game.
Yeah, it'll be a close game. And then Notre Dame at home. Notre Dame's looking much more like a...
they're looking a lot better.
6-6?
Yeah, like... Who would have thought that at the beginning of the season?
Who would have predicted that?
It's funny. Connor had USC at 7-5, and after they beat LSU, all the USC fans were like all over him. And now there's been like an apology tour.
I don't know what that's like, having a USC person all over you for predicting that USC isn't going to do well this year. You know, they're like, wait. Was that you talking mad shit at the beginning of the year?
Well, they still look, you know. Well, you had UCLA at 6-6. We'll see where.
Who knows, man? Who knows?
They've scored 35 points.
That's
a game,
right, baby.
In the last 48 hours,
since Colt's son was born, they are at 35 points per game.
I know. Congrats to Colt's son. We didn't get a name. I don't think. Did he?
No, we did not get a name from Colt's son.
All right, let's move on. We've got.
What would Colt's son be named?
Ooh,
he's Colt.
Yeah.
So is it
Remington.
Another? Is it, it could be
Remington.
Remington Steel. Remington Steel Bush. No,
that's pretty awesome.
I like it. All right, Cole. If you haven't already named your son, we have. And there you go.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Number 14, we have
Northwestern Wildcats,
and they're taking on number 6.
Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, Wisconsin just kind of sat on him.
This was like the older brother, like just sitting on the younger brother, like,
yeah,
poking him in the chest, like, ha ha ha.
This was kind of more like the Wisconsin I was expecting this year, where they're starting to feel themselves, and I think they've kind of figured some things out here in this point in the season. I know they're playing some of their younger guys, the new recruits from Luke Fickell's first couple of recruiting classes. But they're looking decidedly different. They beat Northwestern 23-3. Conversely, this is also kind of the Northwestern I was expecting, you know?
Yes.
Really struggled to score and also struggled to defend.
Are they worse at home? Maybe they're worse at home. I don't know.
Maybe they are
by the
worse at home. They did. I mean, one way this game hinged was Wisconsin had the ball at 4th-and-1 on the Northwestern 43, and they do the stupid thing where they punt it away. Now, this is with a minute to go in the second quarter. They were up 7-0. If Northwestern simply just, you know, falls down 4 times, they go into halftime only down by a score. But instead, they fall down while fumbling the ball inside of their own 10, and Wisconsin's able to score. You can't let a team get away with punting it
bad
on
decisions.
4th-and-1.
Yeah, you yes.
And Northwestern did that. It was a huge swing at the end of the half. It made it a 14-0 game, and there was no way watching Northwestern's offense in this one that they were going to come back down 2 scores at halftime. And that's really what it was. I mean, Wisconsin was good offensively.
Not great.
You know, somebody was, because I mentioned that Northwestern's run defense isn't actually that good, and they spat out some total yardage statistics at me, and I'm just like, it's success rate. It's all about, like, what do you do on short yardage? What do you do on first down? Like, how often are they successfully getting their runs done? And, you know, Northwestern is middling as a run defense, and then Wisconsin middled all over them. They had 43 carries for almost 200 yards, 4.6 yards per carry. I'm going to guess their success rate was pretty high because Northwestern's run defense, while not horrible, is middling. And then offensively, they weren't really able to do a whole lot. Again, it's the master Jack Lausch who's doing pretty much everything for Northwestern. He had 10 carries for 55 yards, and he also, you know, threw 82 yards in the past game. But there was pretty much no offense aside from him. And Wisconsin's starting to look more like a team that could give some top-tier teams trouble in the Big Ten. Are all of my predictions going to come true?
I don't think so.
No, probably not.
No. That's good. Did you see this? Our buddy Matt Fortuna tweeted this out. Wisconsin strength coach Brady Collins promised the Badgers he would jump in Lake Michigan if they won. And they did. So he posted a video of like all the players in their pads and everything, like the dude jumping in Lake Michigan. So that was that was pretty cool. Just one of those quirky things when you're playing at this like 17,000 seat stadium next to the lake. So that was pretty cool that I ended up doing that. But yeah, it we love the way Wisconsin's kind of coming back here. We were down on them early because of the whole preview thing. But I think, you know, it's looking like a
I mean, Brayden Locke looks good.
Looking like a real team.
Yeah, he's looking right like now. A real quarterback. Their run game's looking awesome. I mean,
they were beating USC at, you know, by 11 at halftime and then just kind of shit the bed in the second half. And
I know it's Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern, but they've only allowed 16 total points in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Pretty.
That's stunning. Yeah. I'm really interested to watch Wisconsin Penn State this weekend. I think that's going to be a really interesting game because I think if you were looking at the top three teams in the league, the obvious ones, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State, which one has looked the most flawed? And it's Penn State, right?
I would say, yeah. And that people in the chat are talking about it's going to be crazy Halloween in Madison.
That's going to be a really, really interesting game. It's a night game. Like, it's going to be wild.
Yeah. Okay. We already talked about Rutgers at 13. We have our number 12 team,
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
And they were hosting number 8,
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Oh, oh, oh!
Yeah, Michigan State out Iowa to Iowa. How many?
This was a very surprising result.
No, yeah, this was kind of weird. I will say, my initial instinct for this game was to take Michigan State, and then I kind of talked myself out of it because of their rush defense. Their run defense is quite good, and Iowa
throws the ball a lot, right?
Iowa's entire offense is based around being able to run the ball, and if they can't, it ends up being the Cade McNamara show, and he really can't handle it. Caleb Johnson had 98 yards on 14 carries, but it was one 75-yard touchdown run and then a whole lot of nothing. Michigan State shut him down, shut this running game down, forced Cade McNamara to make throws, and he couldn't. Aiden Childs limited his critical mistakes to just one terrible interception and otherwise played a really clean, fine game, threw a great touchdown pass, and Michigan State was able to run the ball much more than you might have expected. I think this is a win for Jonathan Smith's running schemes, which are, you know, some of the best, I think, in college football. 40 carries for 212 yards and a touchdown. They scored, I think it was four field goals and almost had a fifth in the first half, but then missed from, I think, 51 yards at the end or something like that. Just a stunning number of field goals for a team. You know, you don't. Yeah, it was a 55-yarder. Sorry, I undersold it, Jonathan Kim. I'm sorry. 50. I know you have a powerful leg. Please do not kick me. But yeah, they had one, two, three, four, five, six.
He was six of seven.
Six made field goals in a football game.
His long was 55.
How often does that happen? How often does that happen in this league? Can we still get out of this? Is this possible?
Attempting seven field goals.
But yeah, Michigan State won 32-20. But the story of it really was Michigan State shut down that running game and Iowa didn't have a great answer for it. And Jonathan Smith is, I think, coaching way above expectations in his first year at Michigan State, especially given the kind of catastrophe that Aiden Childs has been at quarterback for much of this year. To be 4-3 at this point, and all right, let's put them on bowl watch. Looking at their remaining slate, they go at Michigan, and Michigan is broken.
Yes.
So that'll be an interesting one. Indiana at home, they're going to lose to the Killer Cincinnati, obviously. At Illinois, they'll probably lose that one. But then they get Purdue and Rutgers both at home to close out the year.
Yeah. That's
we're looking at bowl team Michigan State here.
That's a very distinct possibility.
That's nuts. Good for Jonathan Smith. Good for that program to bounce back from Mel Tucker masturbating.
If I told you Iowa was going to play a football game and the time of possession was going to be 39-44 for one team and 20-16 for another, so essentially double, 40-20, you would assume Iowa had the 40.
Yep.
They did not. Like, that is as anti-Iowa as it gets, to have someone else double up your time of possession. So that was when you play that kind of football and it's working and you get the lead, you can grind things out and the other teams chase it. Like, it's so situational, right? Like, things can kind of work out in your favor for punting is helping and just running the football and all those things. And when you're like behind and it's just not quite, it's really hard to get that working. And it just seemed like it was one of those nights where your style, Iowa, was not going to work and the team you're playing is outdoing it for you.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I got.
Yeah, this was a masterclass, and I think it, if you look at the stats, I mean, Michigan State probably should have won by a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, settling for all those field goals, but 27 first downs to 12 first downs, 468 yards to 283, turnovers were even, penalties were not significantly different. I mean, Michigan State should have beat that ass harder. Which is, I think, an impressive thing to say about a 12-point win over Iowa.
We had a comment from Tony. Six field goals was a Michigan State record.
Damn. So,
crazy. Very unexpected result, but, you know, props to Jonathan Smith and Michigan State for getting it done. We have, let's see, number 11 we've got.
Washington Huskies.
They were on a bye. We also have number 10.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
They were on a bye. How do we have them at number 10? I don't know. Like, it's just, there's so the middle's so weird.
It's kind of willy-nilly.
It's like hard to like do this kind of stuff. All right. Then we get to our ranked on ranked matchup. We have number 9.
Michigan Wolverines.
And they're taking, it's like her laugh there. They're taking on number 5.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
I don't really understand how Michigan was still ranked going into this one.
That's just sort of like residual. You won the national championship last year.
Look, I'll say this. I mean, Michigan had a bunch of they had stupid fumbles in the first half that probably made this game look worse than it was to some extent. But Illinois won 21-7. Pretty much sat on them in the second half, kept them from doing much of anything. Michigan did miss a field goal, but they just had too many turnovers. Two fumbles, one interception, turned it over on downs at least once. And Illinois didn't have many screw-ups. I think this game really was the difference is one team was screwing up constantly and the other one wasn't. It wasn't like Illinois blew them away. They only had 80 yards passing. I mean, that's 80 yards passing and 187 yards on the ground. It's not like they were, you know, completely running away with this. It's just Michigan could not stop screwing up, whether it was missed field goal, fumbles, interception, whatever it was. You know, Jack Tuttle can throw a ball. Is it great? No, it's not.
But he can throw
it. But he can throw a football. Yes. And, you know.
His skill set.
It's within the realm of possibility.
A role-playing game, like, under his skills would be throwing football, where can, Alex Orji, that would have been missing.
Not
throwing football.
Correct. It was just... it was really just turnovers, I think, were the big deal in this game. Michigan shouldn't have been ranked, and I'm not sure, like, I didn't walk away from this one, like, supremely more confident in Illinois than I walked into it. I still think they have some things to atone for from that second half against Purdue. But Michigan is just not equipped, I think, offensively to take advantage of whatever things might have been wrong in Illinois' defense in the second half of that Purdue game. I just don't think Michigan can do it. Now, there's going to be other teams on the schedule maybe that can, but Michigan was not one of them. Should we throw Michigan on bowl watch?
We could.
You want to? They get Michigan State, which we just said could be a loss.
Yeah.
Then it's Oregon. That's at home, but it's a loss.
Yes.
Then it's Indiana on the road.
That is that you just put a loss now. You didn't even play the game.
Northwestern at home should be a win.
But Northwestern on the road.
Pretty, but kind of similar weird teams. Against, no, it's Northwestern at Michigan.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They're better on the road.
But then it's at Ohio State. So Michigan right now is 4-3. It's absolutely imperative to win both of Michigan State and Northwestern to make a bowl.
Wow. That's crazy.
So this game, this coming weekend against Michigan State, is highly critical. Highly critical.
It is. You're bearing the lead, though. The damn uniforms, how
oh
awesome
my God.
Were those?
Oh, my God, yes.
So I put some comments in the chat. Someone said, the commentator said it would took 2 hours to paint each helmet. But the Red Grange unis, they looked freaking sweet. And when it was like, you had that, I think it was a safety with the interception, and he's kind of rumbling, returning it. Yeah. And it just looked like, oh, God, that looks like old school football. So, yeah, good stuff. Caden Feagan, the Illinois running back, missed this game. He missed Purdue last week before, so there's some question about his able to return. But Michigan's offense, just watching that, I put it was like a poop emoji. And Rick Neuheisel said that Michigan at 4-3 and Kennesaw State, your buddy Rick Neuheisel, at 0-6 are the only two FBS teams to throw for less than 1,000 yards and have 10-plus turnovers this season. So they got to figure something out. And Brian Jones says Kennesaw State – started playing football when? About 10 years ago. These guys started in 1890. They're playing like it's 1890. They're not even playing that good. This is a problem. Like, you can't be this bad on offense. Like, you got to figure some shit out. Like, this is a problem.
All right. Do we want to look at the potential for 10-win Illinois?
Yeah. And people in the chat are talking about that.
6-1 right now.
Yeah.
Here's the remaining schedule. At Oregon this weekend, let's go loss.
Okay.
All right. Then it's Minnesota and Michigan State, both at home. Win-win. Minnesota can be frisky.
But yeah.
I'm going to go win-win. And then it's at Rutgers, at Northwestern.
Both.
Seems highly doable to go 10-2. I wouldn't be surprised if they drop one of those four, but going from where we had them preseason, I think we were both underwater on Illinois.
I think we both had
them 4-8 or 5-7. They're going to finish, I think, at minimum 8-4. And
yeah, that's probably the floor.
Yeah, the absolute floor is 8-4. Pretty awesome.
Luke Altmaier, baby.
Go Bert.
Okay. Let's go. We had number 8, Iowa. We already talked about. I'm not sure why we have them this high, too. But number 7.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Because you got to put them somewhere. They apparently, I was told they were there. It wasn't apparent if you watched the game, but they were taking on number 3.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
Remember when I said earlier in the season that I thought UCLA was a perfect mirror, that you see yourself most clearly when you play UCLA, like you see your flaws, you see all the things that are wrong because UCLA is like perfectly bad. They're like a perfect mirror.
Yeah.
Indiana is like an opaque mirror. You see nothing about yourself except the killer Cignetti bearing down on you with his horrible, like half smirk, but mostly a scowl.
Yeah.
Just ready to kill you.
I was like, this is like a reign of terror. That's what I put like, in the description.
We don't know anything more about Nebraska after this game than we did beforehand, except they, like everyone else, is going to fall to the killer Cignetti.
Yeah.
Indiana won 56-7. Curtis Rourke got hurt at the end of the first half. They brought in their backup quarterback who threw like some of the worst passes I've ever seen last year for Indiana. And he was killing them too.
Yeah.
He was 7 of 8 for 91 yards, 2 touchdowns, and also ran the ball really effectively. And they they put up 28 more points after halftime. They ran the ball all over them. They forced a ton of turnovers. Nebraska, Dylan Raiola, who's been pretty sound this year, threw 3 interceptions. I mean, just murdered them.
It was crazy.
A 7-touchdown win at home over Nebraska. And I still, like, I walk away from that and I'm like, I think Nebraska's still pretty good. I don't think they're bad. Well, but yeah, Indiana
you put
is.
Put them number 7. Yeah, but Indiana's just.
Indiana's just a team of killers. They're full killing everyone they play against. They forced 5 turnovers on Nebraska in this game.
So bad. I mean, I think when you can make a freshman quarterback look scared or look like very, very uncomfortable. It just seems like that, like Cignetti knew what we need to do to try to like take him out of his game and make him look like he's never played college football before.
I mean, he turned it over 4 times, including the fumble.
Yeah.
Like just, ooh.
And that, but that's coaching. And you know, we talked about a little bit of NIL money infusion in the off season. Mark Cuban apparently maybe getting involved. You bring in the killer coach that just, you know, death from above kind of guy. This is like Sherman's March to the freaking sea stuff, like just destroying everything. This is pretty impressive to watch. Like they literally won 3 games last year.
Yep.
And now you're like, do you want to play them? No, I do not. So really impressive win. We'll see, you know, for Nebraska. It's tough, but I think this is one you can get over, like you were saying. It's just sort of like, hey, dude, we hit a buzzsaw. Like, we're not going to play like this every week. We're not going to play a team like this every week. I don't think this is going to be too much of a demoralizing thing, like getting, you know, your ass handed to you like that. Because it just seems like, okay, this was not our day kind of thing, and maybe you can bounce back. But you can't let this loss beat you twice or 3 times, because that's got to be somewhat demoralizing that you were like, oh, this is like, what was the spread in this one?
It was Indiana by 6.5.
Yeah,
it
wasn't even a touchdown.
Yeah.
We both got this one right.
I mean, if you like, the thing is, turnovers are to a certain extent lucky. Yes, a lot of it was, it felt and it looked forced, but turnovers are lucky. Nebraska is not 49 points worse than Indiana. Like, that's just, you know, a cascading thing where everything went wrong for Nebraska. Yes. In a way that. And what I liked, again, I'll say this for Nebraska, they didn't quit. There was no, like, they kept going for it. They kept, like, the coaching staff didn't quit on them. It was a lot of turnovers on downs in the second half. They were moving the ball okay. They were coaching the right game. It's just Indiana was a whole lot better, and they couldn't stop making mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, they were facing a nearly a 4th and goal and threw a 78-yard interception. Like, it's just, what are you going to do?
Yeah. But this dude really impressed with what Indiana's doing. And I didn't play anybody, but like three wins last year. Like it's just night and day. And how much of a difference a great coach makes.
Yeah, and we're going to have to see. I mean, Taven Jackson, the guy who came in, he might not have to play. I mean, I think Pete Thamel was reporting that Rourke's definitely out for this weekend against Washington.
Yeah, they said it was going to be like he's going to miss some time. We just don't know how much, but he should return. So we'll see. We'll hopefully have some more information by our preview for that one.
Yep.
Okay, we already talked about everybody else except number four.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. On a bye, and also number two,
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
On a bye.
Beautiful.
All right, let's go through our mythical Pac-12 rankings quick, and we'll take a break. Only one of these teams is ranked in the AP poll. How crazy is that? How the mighty have fallen. Well, did we... Oh, okay. Wait, why is it? Oh, you know what? Never mind. One second. We were sent some sounds for Indiana, and I haven't even listened to them yet, but I'm going to play them for you.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Here's the other one.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women. And he kills the bad guys. Signetti. Signetti kills.
And then?
God has mercy.
Signetti.
Don't.
Signetti kills.
I can't believe I almost
number one and number three are my favorite.
Okay. This is pretty quick.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
He gets the women. I think we might get canceled for that, but... Good stuff. Who sent that in? Crap, I forgot. I'm sorry. Well, that was pretty awesome. I'll find who sent that in. I didn't have it in front of me. Okay. We have number 12.
Stanford Cardinal.
Got blasted off the field by SMU at home.
They suck. number 11.
UCLA Bruins.
You could have moved them up.
I guess I did.
Number 10.
Oregon State Beavers.
Lost at home to UNLV.
To UNLV?
Yes.
Ooh. Oof. Well, UNLV's good this year, but okay. Number 9.
Arizona Wildcats.
I'll tell you where Arizona is. Jason Scheer, our friend and compatriot, is already trying to figure out Brent Brennan's buyout details in his contract and coming up with some very disappointing information for his fan base.
Is it? Are they in year three of Brent Brennan, or is this? No.
They've taken a team that, did they win double-digit games last year?
I think so.
And they're 3-4. They look horribly coached. It is such a Rick Neuheisel team. I feel bad, and I rarely feel bad for Arizona fans because of basketball hangover, but like I feel bad for Arizona fans because like they're experiencing the Neuheisel experience, I think, for the first time, where, yeah, we kick a 52-yard field goal when the other team's just scoring touchdowns left and right constantly, and we're going to miss it, but we're going to try it for no reason. They're experiencing that for the first time, and it's sad, and I'm sorry for them.
Yeah.
They got their ass kicked by our now number.
Oh, wait. Okay, hold on.
They played Colorado. Do it.
Okay. Oh, number two.
Yeah.
Colorado Buffalo.
Ass kicked at home, 34-7. Colorado, beginning of the year, it looked like they were still kind of the same team as last year, but they have rebounded significantly since then. That UCF game where they went on the road in a game that they were double-digit dogs. They won by 27. Then they came very close to knocking off Kansas State, a good Kansas State team, and then they absolutely smoked Arizona. They're going to go to a bowl game for sure this year.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, it was Doug that sent us those.
Hell yeah, again. Doug.
Thank you, Doug. I was looking for that when you're asking me to hit buttons here. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Number 8.
California Golden Bears.
They're doing everything but winning the game.
Yeah, are they 0-4 in ACC play?
Yeah, and I think they're combined. They've lost those games by like a combined 6 points or something crazy. Yeah.
Speaking of teams that have lost by not many points,
USC Trojan.
They're at number 7.
All right, straight up trade. Somebody offers you it, no buyouts considered. Do you take Justin Wilcox over Lincoln Riley as the USC head coach right now?
No. Are you kidding me?
All right. Straight up offered today, yeah. Deion Sanders over Lincoln Riley right now.
I would have to wait till next year to see after he doesn't have a son with him. So no, I don't think I would do that either.
Straight up offered right now, Kenny Dillingham, Lincoln Riley.
Ooh, that's more interesting because of the contract stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's more of a potential one. I would.
All right, Jed Fish, Lincoln Riley.
No,
right
I can't.
Now.
That, too many pianos.
Jake Dickert, Lincoln Riley. No. Right now. No.
Let's get on with this. Number 6.
Utah Utes.
They're super hurt. They lost to TCU at home 13-7. They couldn't score the ball.
Yeah. Is Cam Rising hurt again?
He's hurt. He's again. Hurt for the year. He's probably going to get another year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's done for – okay, whatever. I'm so tired of hearing about that. Number 5.
Washington Huskies.
They were on a
– yes.
They were in a bye. Number 4.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Lost on the road at Cincinnati. Kenny Dillingham threw his kicker under the bus, but then apologized afterwards.
Yeah, he's called for open tryouts for kicking.
Yes, and then he apologized.
Said he was serious.
He was serious, and then he thought better of it, apparently, and apologized. But he also did some stupid things in this game.
Some pianos?
Well, there was like kicking on a 4th-and-2 that shouldn't have been a kick, and then his rationalization afterwards was the exact same as Deshaun Foster's. So,
must be right.
Come on, Kenny. You can do better than this.
All right, number 3.
Washington State Cougars.
Washington State is 6-1.
6-1, baby.
And they blew out Hawaii 42-10.
Yeah. UCLA blew out Hawaii too, right?
All right. 10-win Washington State. Here's what has to happen. They have to beat 4 of at San Diego State, Utah State at home, at New Mexico, at Oregon State, and Wyoming at home.
Yeah, that's going to happen, I think.
Yeah, I think they're going 10 wins.
Nice. Okay, we already talked about number 2, and then we have number 1.
Oregon Ducks.
Nice. Okay, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. Come back and do some questions. All righty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. We have, I think, a couple voicemails. We do. One of them's like 2 minutes. Oh my god,
that's fine.
Okay, here we go. First, what's up?
Hey, Dave and Ryan, this is Corey calling from Pennsylvania here in Big Ten country. I consider myself a lifelong Big Ten guy, having spent most of my life in Oregon and Los Angeles. Now probably in the low-light country of Big Ten land, you know, you're in central PA, but nonetheless, I just wanted to call in because I just finished watching the UCLA game, and was that the Rocky Balboa Deshaun Foster game? Pianos were falling left and right and left and right at the end of that game. They were just bouncing right off him. He just was taking jab after jab, and it didn't matter. Fourth down, you're in field goal range. You got your timeouts. You can kick a field goal and basically end the game, but no. Take the delay game, kick the 55-yarder, preserve those timeouts. Third and medium, throw the ball. Stop the clock. Just give Rutgers a chance. Despite all that, UCLA, players came through, they got a pick, they were kind of on the kick, and somehow came away. So, Rocky Balboa, John Foster, I don't know, but seriously, I am happy.
Is he recording this from a well?
Yeah.
At the end of the game or after the game with Deshaun Foster and Garbers was nice, and I hope they can build a program. So please, David Woods, motivate them. Hopefully they can build off this because nobody wants to see USC be the premier team in LA. I mean, they were relevant a couple years ago for 5 minutes, and they're already inseparable. So hope they can move it forward. Speaking of Rocky Balboa, do you have a ranking of the Rocky movies for us?
Ooh.
That'd be great. Thank you, guys. And go Ducks. There you go. Ryan will probably not be surprised by that. Anyways, keep it mediocre. Later.
Thanks.
Good stuff from what we could hear. All right, I'm going to start with the Rocky rankings. Okay, so here's the thing. The best actual movie in the bunch is obviously the first one. However, it's Rocky IV. It's the best watching experience of the Rocky movies.
It's pretty awesome.
Ivan Drago, ending the Cold War.
Break you.
Ending the Cold War. Rocky Balboa ends the Cold War.
Yeah.
If I can change and you can change, anyone can change. And then Cold War ended, right?
I do remember watching, like, I was a kid then, so you know, being in the Cold War and, like, not liking the commies and all that stuff, like, it was pretty badass to go watch that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really cool experience.
Then I'll go one. Then I will go...
Like, 2-3?
I'd go 3-2.
You like Clubber Lang?
I like Clubber Lang. I understand it's like not very good. Are we just going the classic five?
I don't even remember five. So
five was Tommy Gunn.
I don't even know if I saw that.
That's where they have a street fight at the end of it. And Rocky's dealing with brain damage.
Oh yeah. I don't even remember.
And then do you count the Creed movies?
I haven't seen any of those, but those look pretty cool.
The first one's really good. They fall off pretty dramatically. All right. So that's the definitive ranking.
Okay.
Okay. As for the rest of it, look, I said Deshaun Foster definitively won the game management award against Greg Schiano, but that does not mean he did not make egregious mistakes. They did allow a delay of game on a 50-yard field goal attempt that made it a 55, and then they still kicked it. I'm still okay with kicking it. It's fine. But how do you allow a delay of game at that point? Like, you're not using your timeouts to come back. You don't need them. Use a timeout there. It's fine. And don't get a delay of game. They also had a PAT where they didn't have enough players on the field, and they took a delay of game there. And I wonder if he, like, learned the wrong lesson from that, because that is the right move. If you somehow screw up and you don't have enough players on your PAT team, just take a delay of game because, you know, kicking it from the seven is fine.
Yes.
No big deal. But, yeah, there were some errors. There's never not going to be errors. It's just that fourth and one, I'm really trying to encourage more of that. So that was good.
Cool. Hey, I forgot to mention, thanks to Matthew, our Survivor pool results for week 8. 252 entries, 5 entered week 8. Only 3 survived. So somebody lost because they picked Rutgers to win and UCLA won. And then somebody lost because they picked Maryland to lose, and they won. So 3 survivors left, and Matt says that's what happens when you assume UCLA will only win one game all season, when clearly they were going to win at least 2. Duh. 2 of the survivors, Pickle and Moosey, have made the exact same picks each of the past 8 weeks, and the third survivor, Griffin, deserves to have a smack talk comment on the podcast, and he says, I'm 11 years old, and I'm kicking some 30-year-old butt. If I get a Trader Joe's gift card, I will not let my parents spend any of it. Anyway, David, please swear less. Congrats to Pickle, Moosey, and Griffin.
So do we think that is an actual 11-year-old or a grown man pretending to be 11 years old?
I'm assuming it's 11-year-old.
You think so?
Yeah, why not? You don't think so?
I can't imagine an 11-year-old listening to our podcast.
Well, he asked you to swear less, so yeah, I think so.
Feels like a parental comment because no 11-year-old would actually care enough.
Okay. Well, anyway, congrats. So I think we're going to give them all a gift card, but let's see who the winner is. And maybe you'll get like 2 or something.
That's true.
Or yeah, maybe John will do a bigger one for the winner. But yeah, congrats to our 3 winners there. I think we have a text message if you want to.
Yes,
Steve.
I would love to.
Okay.
I would love to do that.
Have you do something here?
Yeah, let's do it. Wait, where is it?
You don't see it.
Which one is it?
I got it.
Oh, I got it. I got it. I got it. I cannot believe I am actually feeling sorry for the Zodiac Killer. I mean, resident Rutgers fan. But damn it, I kind of do feel bad for him. Losing his life savings, not able to give out his address in order to get a gift card, unable to show his face in public. Maybe West Texas Mike could send a super chat the Zodiac's way. Maybe POC simulcasters could start up a GoFundMe page. Maybe he could charge an Airbnb fee to the UCLA players and coaches to stay at his place for the Rutgers weekend. Scratch that one. No money in that kitty. Good luck on the lottery, Zodiac. Keeping it mediocre, Oxnard Steve.
I thought we'd hear from him after losing to UCLA, but...
Maybe he went with your picks and he's currently engaged in other activities.
Ah, could be.
Because he's enraged.
He does. Historic season from Dave. Will this be the first season neither USC or UCLA go to a bowl game since Ryan Abraham bought USCfootball.com? I mean, I didn't really buy it. It was
all right. Hang on. Which seasons has USC missed a bowl game?
They missed.
Right, hang on. I got it. All right. So it's 2021 and 2020. Well, UCLA didn't go in 2020 because there really weren't bowl games, were there? No, they had some bowl games, didn't they?
They had some, but most people opted out.
Well, 2021, technically, UCLA was invited, but did not play in the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, so it's not that long ago.
Yeah, it's not that long ago. And 2018 is also a year where USC and UCLA both missed bowl games.
Yeah. And I've been running the site since 1996, so
yep,
not historic.
No. These two programs have not been great recently.
Yeah.
FYI.
You want me to do? I'll do this voicemail.
Sure.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk calling from the worst state in the Big Ten footprint and what should be home of the worst team in the Big Ten footprint with the rankings today. UCLA finally beat a competent program. I'm sure Dave's going to disagree with that, but UCLA has two wins now versus FBS programs, powerhouse FBS programs, and Purdue only has one win on the season, and that's to a kind of okay, if even that, FCS program. So I think it's firmly time to rank Purdue as the worst team in the Big Ten. And I'm sure you guys are running out of things to talk about. So Ryan, could you talk about the impact of Oregon's travel and if that caused them to only score 35 points on Purdue this week? And how much you think that probably slowed down their offense? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I think thanks, Perk, for sure. I think the travel and Dylan Gabriel. I heard his payment for point shaving was a little late this week, so that's probably why. Also, they could have scored a lot more, obviously, but travel and didn't get his full payment for point shaving. So
yeah,
sorry they didn't cover. And then there's some mobster somewhere is not very happy.
Correct. This is from Keon, mascot fight. Hi, fellas. Which of the Big Ten mascots would you two, as a team with only your bare knuckles, beat in a fight? Which would you lose to?
Okay.
Thanks. Best, Keon.
I thought we put there's a moratorium on.
No, this one's funnier because it's not fights between them. All right. So let's start with a terrapin. I think us two combined, we could definitely beat up a turtle.
Yeah. Just turn upside down.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights. I think a Scarlet Knight probably kills us.
Yeah, if we have fists. And they have a sword. Yeah.
A Nittany Lion. How big is the Nittany Lion? I think
it's big enough to kill us.
You don't think the two of us combined with our brain power could fight a Nittany Lion?
I mean...
What is...
We don't have claws or anything.
It looks like a little mountain cat. Okay. I don't know.
Okay, I'll give us a shot.
Like, one of us would have to be the bait, and the other one would have to sneak up from behind and grab it.
With a rock or something?
And then stab it or something. Yeah, with a rock or... I mean, I guess we're using our fists.
Yeah, but can we use, a stick or something?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Okay, Ohio State, the Buckeyes. I do think we can beat up some nuts.
We could huck them into lakes.
I can beat some nuts.
Yeah.
We might have to go to Mel Tucker for some help with this one.
Nut beating.
The Hoosiers, I think we can just beat up some residents of Indiana.
Yeah, in general.
Yeah.
We don't have to pick the toughest ones.
garden variety average Indiana resident. Yes.
Something. Yeah.
Purdue, beating up some people who make boilers. These are engineers. They're nerds. Yeah. You were an engineer.
Yeah. I know how they think.
But there's two of us and only one of them.
Right.
So I think we'd have a decent chance.
Unless they have the big drum with them, I don't know.
All right, Illinois, the Illini.
I think it would be tough to beat if they have a bow and arrow and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going back in time, for sure. But again, I think as of now, it's just a resident of Illinois. Oh, it
could
just be,
yeah. So a random resident, we could probably do.
It kind of depends. If we're going historic, probably we get killed very quickly. Wolverine, This is a small thing. Like, Wolverines are not big.
They're tough, but yeah, I think we could.
I think we'd be able to handle a Wolverine.
Like, yeah.
A Spartan would definitely murder us. We'd be dead.
All right. Oh, Hummus here says the Nittany Lion is a mountain lion. Yeah, mountain lions are pretty big.
They're pretty big, but I think, you know, again, sneak up from behind, you know, probably outweigh one, don't you think?
They're pretty big. Like, mountain lions are fucking tough, man.
I don't know, man.
Oh, sorry to our...
Our 11-year-old listener. Yeah. A wildcat from Northwestern?
They're smaller, right?
I mean, it depends on what kind of wildcat. I think wildcat is kind of generic.
Yeah.
I'll say iffy.
Yeah, I think we could probably throw it in the lake.
We could definitely like we could definitely kill a badger.
Yeah, badgers, no.
Who am I missing? We can definitely kill a cornhusker. That's just a person.
Yeah. Trojan's got a sword, no. Bruin... How big is that bear? Probably bear.
I mean, no. Bears. Like, honestly, you could give 10 of us a chance against one bear, and we would probably lose if we're going barehanded. And a duck, we would obviously kill a duck. we would probably be able to kill a husky.
Yeah, it would be sad.
It would be very sad to do. It would look at us with those beautiful crystal blue eyes, and we would just be wailing on it.
There's that hilarious meme where, like, the puppy husky, like, is falling down the stairs backwards, and someone had, like, an explosion at the bottom. Did you see that one? It's pretty funny. Like, it's like this baby husky, like, cute puppy husky, and then it just falls down the stairs and explodes. It's great.
Very sad. And then...
gophers.
Golden gophers. We would obviously kill some gophers, but we would have to find them. They can scoot underground.
They have to come to us.
They could come out, nip at our heels, and then jump back down, you know?
It'd be fun to punt one of those things.
And then the Hawkeyes.
I mean, they fly around, but as soon as – you got to come – like, there would be – you know, there's like a passivity rule. You can't just fly around forever. You have to come and fight. And once you got hand-to-hand, they'd be screwed.
Well said.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Next up, this is a text message, I think. Good evening, gentlemen. James from Phoenix. Been listening to your show since 2019, and I must say I didn't think it could get any worse. Another satisfied customer. But now, as an ASU fan, I must say listening to you guys break down Wisconsin versus Northwestern and Maryland versus Rutgers week after week is borderline unbearable. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think we can all take comfort and joy in USC being complete ass. Hold on. Where is it?
They're going to be ass. Huge ass.
So my question is this. If you guys were starting your own college football team, would you rather hire Lincoln Riley or Kenny Dillingham as your head coach? Thanks, guys. Go Devils.
That's a Kenny Dillingham.
Yeah, I think I would go Dillingham at this point.
Especially if you're starting a program.
Right. If you were taking over, like Riley's proved he could take over for a legend, but rebuilding, I think Kenny Dillingham's doing a really good job of rebuilding at ASU from the ashes that Herm Edwards left them in.
Yep. All right. Here's Dylan from Albuquerque. Question for the podcast. Good morning, gentlemen. After witnessing another weekend, he actually put the singular gentleman. Which one of us do you think he's talking to?
I don't know.
Okay.
You do wear the same t-shirt all the time. So
that's
maybe
so
me,
true.
Maybe me.
That makes me a gentleman. After witnessing another weekend of atrocious but consistent USC football at a venue multiple time zones away, a thought came to me. As a loyal listener to the show and Ryan's site as well, I really do appreciate all his hard work, planning, dedication, and effort to lug his staff across the country to cover below middling Big Ten football, i.e. trips to Minnesota and Maryland. Ryan made the right business decision to leave on a Thursday, despite his six-hour mimosa-fueled delay, to make sure he's adjusted to the time zone by Saturday evening. Did Lincoln Riley ever consider a plan like that? Didn't UCLA leave on Thursday? Anyway, it got me thinking. What a great opportunity missed by David and his staff to witness firsthand the Bruins' historic first ever Big Ten win this weekend at Rutgers, the birthplace of college football. They could have had a UCLA meetup at some dingy bar, is what we're going with there, in Manhattan, walked to the very grounds where college football originated, and celebrated with drinks on the Jersey Shore. Oh well, it's not like UCLA and Rutgers are in the same conference or anything. They'll surely be playing there again in two seasons like traditional conference play is scheduled. Oh, never mind. That won't happen until 2028, probably at a point where UCLA and USC will already be back in the Pac-12. The question is, why does David and his staff not travel to away games? Do they not care about football and only basketball? Or is it just financially irresponsible? I guess it's not the end of the world because at least David goes to the home games to enhance the coverage for his subscribers. Right? Fight on, I guess, Dylan from Albuquerque. First, it's not my staff. This is Tracy Pearson's staff. Second, I am going Two, I went to Hawaii, and I'm going to go to Nebraska. I'm just not going to go to the Rose Bowl. That's what I avoid.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with away games. I will say this. I think I've said this before on this show. For me, writing about the game in the way that I have to write about it and podcast about it right after the game, it really helps to not be there. I think some of the stuff about being at a game is very outdated sports writer-y thinking from yesteryear.
Thanks.
No offense. None taken. But for the most part, it's easier to watch a game on TV and actually gather insight from it than it is at the game itself. Like, I can't count the number of times where whoever's covering the game for us will text, hey, what happened on that play? Because I couldn't see it. Like, and the replay was not showing it correctly or whatever that they have the monitor on in the press box. You've texted me before. Like, was that call bad? I can't tell.
Because you get,
you get replays. You get all the, like, insight. You get all the commentary about it. And so there's a lot of value in watching the games. If you're trying to write quick analysis after the game, and this is how I type. Just that was a to not be there. And so, you know, while I would love to never go to the Rose Bowl again for a game, that's more of a bit. The reality is it's easier to do my job if I'm not there.
And to be honest, like – it's something I have to consider because I was probably not going to travel to as many games. Same reasons for David. If it was the Pac-12, I've been everywhere, but I'm 53 now. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm doing a lot of work though. I want to do this much work. I don't know, but whatever. I do go to some vacations every once in a while, but it's the Big Ten. So like, okay, there's all these new trips. I went early. My sister was there, so I could see her. I saw friends from college in Minnesota. But sending like four people to a game, especially when USC loses, that doesn't really help business and stuff. It can be a little much. But you know, we shoot field level highlights that people seem to like. But you know, you could argue is that worth it or not because it's an expensive send somebody there. Having our own photographer at a lot of these places, it's kind of what we do. But like David's right, like is that outdated? I don't know. I'll have to consider that going forward, but it is an expense to send a bunch of people to games all over the freaking country, and you gotta like judge is it worth it for business or not. Kyle says, Ryan or David coming to Seattle, I need to swing by our RV on the water. I will be there with my staff. We would love to, Kyle, so drop me an email. Ryan, RV on the water, so is that a boat or
RV on the water?
Is it like a RV parked near the water?
Or I would guess it's on, on the lake side, on the lakefront.
Okay. But the sailgating there is awesome. So I will be there.
That's something I still haven't done. So I've attended a game there, but I haven't done the full sailgating experience. I need to do that at some point. I don't think this year is the year. It's a Friday night game.
Wait, is UCLA goes to Seattle too?
Yeah, on a Friday.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, Friday's tough.
Yeah, Friday's really tough.
Both USCs are going to be up there. Cool. But Kyle, yeah, email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. I will be there. We'd love to come by and stuff. So, good stuff. All right. And then we have one last one. Oh, no, that was it.
Is that it? I thought there was one last one.
It was a Survivor.
Oh, no, you're right.
Okay.
Tight show, great show. Best show we've ever done?
Best show we've done today, for sure.
Wow. I think your energy level is a little subdued today. You're tired.
I'm tired. Like, that's a long flight, you know, Maryland. And I got up super early to fly back. And then I had to do shows last night. And it was just like, but I got a bunch of sleep. But it was a day.
You seem a little down.
No, I just, it was a lot. I mean, I was exhausted when I got back there. It is sucked. And the one email that you were reading about, did UCLA go on Thursday for Rutgers?
They did.
Because it's a 9 a.m. game.
Yeah.
So Lincoln Riley announced that they were going to change their travel plans because this is the longest trip. And I thought that meant they would go Thursday, but he ended up going later on Friday. So they did like a walkthrough or something at USC and went later. And I was like, that seems questionable. But you know what? I saw that Kirk Cignetti, he's like flying as late as possible, get in, win, get the hell out. If he says that, I'm like, okay, I'm never going to complain about travel. Like, if you want to do that, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say legitimately, taking like all bits out of it, I don't think it matters enough that there needs to be a long conversation about it. I think it's interesting that all of these teams are doing different stuff. Some are choosing to go in early. Kenny Dillingham went insane last week and decided to wake up at 4 a.m. to get ready for himself for the game and then also go out early on Thursday. Lincoln Riley chose to do like what some NFL teams do, which is go in super late and just make it a quick business trip and then get back. Yeah. I don't think it really matters. I will say the fact that we have to have this conversation about all of this cross-country travel just, again, speaks to how stupid all of this is. Like, it's just so stupid that Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC, Oregon, and Washington are having to make multiple time zone conference game trips every year.
Yeah.
It's really stupid. We shouldn't have done this. Nobody should have done it. And hopefully there will be enough of a quick competitive impact on all of these teams that better decisions are made very quickly. Because, I mean, the fact that UCLA or USC is 3-4 right now. Look, I'm not saying it's entirely because Maryland is, you know, three time zones away. But if Maryland was, instead of Maryland, it was, I don't know, who's like that same level of bad like in the Pac-12? Arizona. Okay. If they'd gone on the road to play Arizona last week, do you think they would have lost?
Probably not. Yeah.
And I like, does it impact you to go that far away? Probably, like to some extent. I'm tired when I take a long trip.
Oh, I was exhausted yesterday.
So I don't know. I mean, it's all stupid. And like, but this was, again, this is knowable stuff that we talked about 2 years ago, which is there's going to be a competitive impact. That matters too. Like, yes, you're going to make more money. You're also going to take more losses. Does this work out? Like, does it make sense in the long run? Who knows?
Yeah.
Is it a fun experience to watch your team lose to Maryland? No,
I don't think it was. Yeah.
No, and it never will be.
All right. Kyle said these West Coast coaches could do a red eye Friday and head right to the stadium.
Yeah. Shit. Fly in that morning. Yeah, exactly.
Then why not?
You know, yeah.
You could do it. Take a nap.
You're taking charters. You know, just get out on the runway at 1 a.m, have them sleep on the plane, hop out of the plane, go play the game, yeah, get back on like, the plane, go home.
Give them like sleep gummies so they wake up and then they're all refreshed. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap it up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.